welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight, yes, tonight, we get to go a bit longer, as we have been doing for a number of weeks now. So we can go to about 17 minutes or so after the hour, which is great time because that gives us a lot more time to talk about what I want to talk about this evening. And I thought we'd get into getting past personal anger. And some of you might say, oh, well, what does that all mean? And, of course, I'm going to define it and do all that stuff I usually do at the beginning of the show. And this is your show about metaphysics and spirituality and sometimes issues about psychology and science, which I'm bringing that in, obviously, tonight and talking about this, and certain other factors. But I try to join it all together, at least by the end of the show. And, of course, if you want to, you can call in. The numbers are right on screen. And some of you are listening, and I a growing number, from what I hear, are listening over the phone. Great. Hey, that's a fantastic way to do it. If you're not by a computer and you would love to, you know, or like to hear the show, then what you can do is call in to the radio station on one of the special numbers I have. And if you do that, you can listen. You can listen in. Now, I don't think there's any way that you can also call in and talk to me while you're listening. I think you'd have to have two phones to do that. But I should have found that out before I got on the air, right? But I don't know. I've never done it myself, so that's an interesting point. But even if you did want to do that, on a second line, you could call under normal circumstances, and you might even be able to hear yourself. An odd way, come out of here. There is a delay, I think, of 7 seconds or so. And you wouldn't want to put those two phones together when you did that, by the way. Okay, so all that aside, let's get on to the subject. And when I'm talking about anger, let's talk about anger to begin with, anger in general. Anger is a response. It's kind of, in a way, indelibly connected to fears. There's a definite connection between some fears and anger in general. Generally speaking, it's the fear of loss of control of something or someone that makes people angry. Generally, that's what makes people angry on a personal level. And you'll note that I'm saying getting past personal anger because that's really the problem. When anger becomes personal, it means that someone fears a loss of something that they seek to have control over or someone they have to have control over that in some way affects them on a personal level. Okay? That's what I'm talking about tonight. Now, I'm going to define it in a very different way, anger in a different way, when it isn't personal later in the show. So stay tuned, as I say. And the thing that's really interesting about anger and fear is that fear is a response to, like, avoid in general. It causes us to want to avoid something. So if you don't happen to have an anger response to the fear of losing control, then your next response would be, or your normal response to your fear would be to avoid. Run away. Oh, I'm going away from this. I can't stand it, you know. And that's what a lot of people do. But in some circumstances, some people get the opposite response, and they want to approach rather than to have fear, and do something to oftentimes forcibly gain control over something or someone or both, and on a personal level where it is affecting them personally. And so this is what I'm trying to discuss this evening, is how we can change our responses from personal anger to something else. Okay, so let's talk more then about how we can identify when we're angry. Because I have noticed, and I remember I was a psychotherapist for many, many years, did all kinds of therapy with many, many people. also ran a couple different mental health institutes. So I saw all kinds of anger issues with people. And one of the things that I noticed was that it was almost amazing in some circumstances that some people would come in and be obviously angry. Sometimes they're also afraid, visibly anyway, and not know it. They didn't know they were angry, but they were definitely angry, right? And so this is a kind of thing that I think that is kind of like a natural tendency, because I'm going to tell you this. There's a part of us that's a soul part that doesn't want us to get personally angry. So people like are kind of embarrassed about showing that they're personally angry in some circumstances. They don't want to know it themselves, because there's a part of them that's telling them that there's a better way to respond. But they kind of ignore it. And you might say, well, how come they ignore it? Well, because the anger is a compelling feeling. To approach something means to be somewhat creative in your life and to want to make changes, which is not a bad thing. So you might say, well, if that isn't a bad thing, then what's wrong with being angry? Get angry and do something about it, you know? Well, the problem is that when you personally do something on an approach level, you always remind yourself that you're being selfish in some way. And other people may pick up on it, so you don't like letting them know as well, maybe. Not everybody abides by that. They may not care if other people think that, but some people do, and so they deny their own anger. They deny it to themselves, they deny it to other people, and they may even fool some people, maybe not everybody, but that they're not angry when they are angry. You see what I'm saying? And because personal anger it demonstrates this selfish nature. It isn't that it's wrong to necessarily be selfish in a societal sense. Society does not necessarily punish us for us to be selfish personally. But at a higher level, our soul connection, our conscience, and other parts of ourselves that are higher than our personality do feel that it's not a good thing for us. That's the odd thing. So we can be bugged by part of us that we don't even know is bugging us, you see. Isn't that fascinating? And most of us have a pretty strong soul connection, and so it bothers us to get particularly angry. Yeah. And we may sense it as a weakness in character, a weakness in stamina, a weakness in some part of us that we can't even describe. I'll just describe it as our general soul connection. It's a weakness in that. And that weakness prompts us then to feel bothered by feeling anger and or expressing it. Some people aren't as bothered by it as others. But in general, that tends to have that factor. So that's the reason people tend to repress. They deny this anger. They're repressing the feeling and denying it to themselves and others. It's a strange thing, but it happens very frequently. Now, I'm going to tell you this. If you do that regularly, you can get yourself depressed. It actually is one of the fundamental causes of depression. It makes you feel down. And it also hides the fear. You see, remember that there was this underlying fear, the fear of loss of control. You're not able to control someone else or something else or both. And so you don't know about that fear either anymore if you were to repress it and then deny it to yourself and everybody else or most other people. Then it becomes a problem. It builds up anxiety. It makes you feel impotent. And especially if you have both going on at the same time, in other words, repression of the fear and repression of the anger, then you can develop something called paranoia. Paranoia is not a fear or it's something related to fear, but it's not fear per se. It is the combination of having an approach and an avoidance response at the same time to to a circumstance. You know, you have an anger and a fear and an anger, and you become inoperative. You don't go either way. And then you develop some kind of thing that other people are doing this to you, etc. It really comes out of that frozen state between these two poles, especially when they're repressed. So if you want to get over your paranoia, you got to first uncover the fears and angers you have. And that's also true about getting over your fears and angers, you see. Okay, so getting past personal anger. I'm on a roll here. I hope this is making some sense to you. I know I'm talking like a shrink. Okay, a little bit, maybe. But remember, I did that for a long time, so it's in my bones. But there's a metaphysical principle here, and I want you to see that. I hope I can draw it out. And that is that a lot of this stuff that we're dealing with in our psyche, that people come in to see therapists and try to deal with, are really connected to the conflict between their personality and their soul. They don't know it. They don't understand it. And you can see how that is all wrapped up in everything I've been explaining here. That actually, when someone is saying they're having a lot of anxiety and a lot of emotional problems, it could be related to the struggle between their soul, who wants to express itself in a bigger way than about themselves personally, and their personal feelings and their personality trying to be more in control. Personality really likes control because that's its main function. I mean, it exists so we survive, and it's there so we can control our lives. And it's the controlling entity, actually. Now, that's a little different than the self. The self is the part of us that's fully conscious, whereas the personality is really subconscious. It's not, most people don't know their personality like on a really good level. Someone else may know it, but usually we ourselves are more ignorant than we are of our personality. And I'm giving a personality an actual defining difference, and it is, you know, like most people talk about personality as some kind of image that a person projects to other people or something. I mean, it's something much deeper than that. Those of you who have read what I've written know it already, or if you've read other people who have written on the subject, you probably know it as well. But so it's a different kind of name and word that I'm using than its really traditional use. But that word still has a long history in spiritual issues and metaphysics as being a description of the way I'm saying it as well. It's just not as commonly used. Okay, so I hope I haven't gone too fast so far, but it's very, very interesting that a lot of people, therefore, who complain of anxiety and then depression, when you repress the anxiety as well as the other feelings we just talked about, like anger and fear, then you become depressed. Ooh. So that's how you end up with a depression. You end up with a depression because you get angry, and then you repress it, you deny it, and the next thing you know, you got anxiety, and then you say, oh, well, I'll do the same thing with the anxiety I do with the anger. I'm just going to forget I even have it, repress it. And then it goes from a state of where you feel anxious to a state where you don't feel it anymore. You say, oh, I'm better. I don't feel it anymore. And the next day you wake up depressed. You say, why am I depressed? I don't know why I'm depressed. And you feel like, oh, there's nothing important in life. And you feel like your feelings are dying on the inside. And you may have sudden uncontrolled urges and feelings come out occasionally. Your sleep pattern may get seriously disturbed. The inability to dream to get rid of some of this energy may start taking place. All kinds of goofy things that we call, you know, like psychological, I guess would be the best word. I was going to use a different word, but we call it psychological, and problems manifest from relatively simple concepts. Now, you might say, well, if it's so simple, how come you shrinks aren't doing something to fix everybody? If it's so simple, just tell us what to do. Yeah. Well, you can't tell somebody to feel what they're feeling and then to change the way they're expressing it, because they don't even admit to the feelings sometimes for, like, months. It takes a long time. It's not, you know, because there's a resistance. There's this battle going on inside of them. Yes, you can do some things that will help shorten that. And that's the difference between usually someone who's a good psychotherapist and someone who's, you know, probably just playing around, not doing much of good. Okay, but that's a different subject. Let's get back now. Here we go. Personal anger is a problem because we come here into this world to express ourselves as souls as best as we can. And we actually have that as a conscious thought before we incarnate in the physical world. It's where our life starts, is the physical world. It goes on to exist in the feeling world or the astral world. And it goes on beyond that to the lower monastic. But still, we come here to express ourselves in those worlds to create more of our creator, co-create with our creator, and to do so with others who are doing the same. Yet, we forget, we become influenced by our personality, interests, and decide that that is the critical reason for our existence. And then it gets into control. Our personality exists to control because it's supposed to, on a very basic level, keep us alive. But then it takes over our whole life, and the next thing you know, we're trying to control everyone and everything. Even the people that are doing terrible things, we feel as though we have a right to control them. And the people who are doing not so bad things, we have a right to control them because we think we know better than they do. And we may have certain levels of arrogance and other issues. These kinds of things are what lead to an angry person. Okay? So, the first thing to deal with in this situation is to no longer seek the level of personal control that people usually have. Now you might say, oh, wait a second. What if I'm dating some person and they're cheating on me? Shouldn't I want to feel like I can control that and stop it or at least confront them? And, you know, I mean, we have a contract, an agreement, a marriage, whatever it might be. What about that? Or maybe someone that ripped me off. I had a partner in a business. They ripped me off. Or maybe someone who I was more distant to, who didn't obey an agreement, or tried to steal or gain something. Don't I have a right to exercise my control personally over that and, you know, all that business? Well, you may, in a legal sense, have those rights in some circumstances. But the laws of man do not necessarily apply to the laws of God into souls. Because if you look at the whole situation as, well, everybody came here to kind of try to be more like their creator, some of them have lost that completely and are doing the opposite. We call them evil. And you look at it from that perspective and you say, well, then what am I doing in trying to control them because they're not doing what I want or need? Maybe there's some bigger issue here. Maybe there's something I need to try to find as a bigger way of solving the issues. And that's when you start thinking about getting past personal anger, when you do that. It doesn't mean you're not going to be angry, by the way. That's why I called it personal anger and not getting past anger, period. Anger has an important place, even for a soul. Souls are not feelingless, and they do experience anger. But their anger is about something different. It's not about the fact that they can't control someone or something else. It's about the fact that those that are functioning in ways that are against God are destructive to all other souls and are functioning in ways that need to be corrected for the sake of all and not for the sake of the one or the few. This is a different concept and a very difficult one for most people to gain, because it calls for completely different actions under the similar, same or similar circumstances. And for a lot of people, they don't like the resolutions that are obviously available to them, because they want to have a more personal solution than the ones that necessarily would come the other way. Why is that? Because the solutions the other way may not recover for the person their personal things, their personal issues, their personal feelings. They may not feel loved by the other person in the long run. They may not feel better about how the other person treats them. They may not feel better about getting things that were stolen from them or destroyed by others back. As a matter of fact, it's even likely that they would have to sacrifice some of those things to achieve the soul ways of dealing with those things. Now, as I said, I was going to get into it. Now I'll talk a little bit about some of those soul ways, so that we can compare and contrast the differences. And in the second half of tonight's show, I'll try to get more into some of the specific examples, and also some things that people can do internally in disciplining themselves and changing their way of functioning so that they go down a different path than maybe they might otherwise. But we'll get to that in a little while. For right now, let's just talk about the basics of what it means to take anger from a personal level to a soul level. Because souls do get angry. I don't want you to think they don't. And if souls get angry, one can convince themselves that even God gets angry. Okay? Now, I know for a lot of people that's going to sound crazy. They're going to say, oh, God, well, how could God get angry? God's everything. Now, I think God has anger because anger is part of the universe, and the universe is all God. I mean, it's everything. But that's another, probably a discussion for another time. Okay, so let's go into this type of soul anger. Souls exercise their anger or approach responses, which are usually creative, in ways that help to build more of God. To them, it means that they don't care about the results to them on a personal level. They care about the results overall on a soul level, so that other souls can express themselves, be more free to do so in co-creative ways with their creator, and help others to do the same. That's what their motive is. So they've got a completely different thing going on, you see. And you can see how this could be very cross-purposed with somebody who is ticked off and wants their money back, or is ticked off and they want this or that thing to happen, or they want someone to apologize or express some feeling to them that they desire, or some kind of related issue, or some type of sexual thing, or whatever. All those things are personal. And the soul says, oh, I don't have any need for those personal things, but I do have a need. I do have a need for others to be, as much as possible, capable of being closer to God. And those that do things that are destructive to that relationship need to be in some way blocked and prevented. So the anger to a soul is to stop those who are being destructive to God, and to use different methods depending upon where they exist. In the physical world, because the physical world is so slow and it evolves so many forces, sometimes and often, if there is a lot of darkness in the approach of someone who is being destructive, there is some level of force that is allowed, both in legal senses, but also demanded upon in a sense of protecting the world for God. That's one of the reasons, and this is going to sound strange, that souls sometimes participate in wars. And they'll fight for freedom, and they'll fight against tyranny, and they will give up their physical life if necessary under certain circumstances. But not because they want a new car, or they hope to get their taxes lowered, or because a million other kinds of reasons. They do so because they want there to be freedom and justice and righteousness for all. And they know that this is what God is, and they want that to be part of how the universe works, but how the world works. And so they're attempting that in many ways, and sometimes it does involve force. Many times it involves a different element, such as an ability to detach from certain emotional reactions, which are, again, self-focused, and to not become mentally, we'll say, fixed in the belief that everything they're thinking is right just because the other person is a real scumbag and doing this or that. So they still have to maintain humility, even in the face of some other people doing some things that are very bad. They've broken agreements, they've done this or that, it doesn't matter, etc. So the soul is looking at this from a very different perspective than the personality is. And to the soul, anger is like a way of moving energy towards something that is a problem, but a problem not for the individual person as much as it is, or much more so, for that of all others. And it may not even be a problem for the individual person, but it is a problem for some others. So souls sometimes sacrifice their personal interests for the needs of others to be free and to have the ability to co-create with their creator, even when they gain absolutely nothing and may sacrifice considerably. Now, that's obviously way past and different from personal anger. You can see that. The personality, then, is literally being transformed back into its soul while physically alive, which is a great thing, by the way. And so, you have a living soul instead of a person, eventually. Now, is it appropriate, then, to, like, love everybody and to... If someone does something really bad, just turn the other cheek and embrace them as being a wonderful soul, etc. No, that's not appropriate. Now, I know there's some Christian people listening to this and say, well, but isn't that what Jesus Christ taught to do? And I would say, read between the lines and read in the lines. And I think you'll come up with a little different understanding. But regardless of that, you know, even if Jesus Christ, that is, it's the hallmark of Jesus Christ's teachings, they may not be the only way that somebody can function. And they may have some particular problems. What would the problems be? Well, if we decided, all of us decided, that we would truly turn the other cheek and get fed to all the lions and do all the other stuff, that's more in traditional Christianity, and literally abdicate our role in co-creating with God when someone or something else is trying to prevent it, and if you just give up, then it would be so easy for evil and darkness to literally take over. So you can't do that. I know some people... I get confused by that. That's all right. I mean, and if you disagree with me, please call in. It's okay. I don't mind, really. Because I respect this. I respect that some people obviously have this thought process. But I can tell you that my experience, as well as my understandings, tell me something different about how souls function. Souls look at a situation, and they are concerned about the common good, and what is the best for all, including those that they might at some time have an altercation with, or have to exert some force on a physical level to prevent from being destructive to everyone else. So they are not pacifists in the full extent of what that word means. They actually may even be truly people at times, as souls, who are aggressive and even physically forceful, as it is needed to be, depending on the circumstance. Maybe they will fight in a war. Maybe they won't, depending upon the nature of what that war is about. But the point is that they aren't clear across the board pacifists, in my opinion, souls or not. Now, I know that's controversial. I think there's other people who believe that or want to believe that that isn't so. Okay, but there's a lot of good reasons for following some of my thought for at least this show and listening to it, because if I'm right, then going the other way can lead to catastrophe. Because if you enable darkness, and especially evil, then the process can be so destructive that we won't even have a world to worry about. This world will become extinguished through tremendous altercations over the long run. And evil eventually, or initially even, taking over, and then there being much greater levels of struggle and fighting after that. Let's try to avoid that, if possible, by being wise in our exercise of our personal anger into a soul level of experience and action. Okay, so if souls are doing all this, if they're really, we'll call it functionally expressive of their anger in ways that limits and destroys some levels of evil at times, and further enlightens darkness when evil isn't there. You can't really enlighten evil. I know some people want to try that. They think they can save those evil folks. But the evil folks are not enlightenable. I don't believe so, because they don't usually have a soul. And if they're soulless, there's nothing there. You can't really say, well, oh, yeah, I'll get to them, you know. And they'll just use it against you, which would be a terrible outcome. Okay, so that being my position, then I think it follows that souls are here to co-create with their creator and help others to do the same. And in so doing, they use their anger about some others who they think and find are, and again, this is a general called wisdom, because we can't say that it's perfect at all times, but its souls are expressing more wisdom than that. So they've done some contemplation, they have really examined the facts, they have tested their theories, and they come to the conclusion that some others are seeking to control and be destructive to not them personally, although that may be true, but to the world in general. To God. And then the soul takes action. It takes action because it must. It can't allow the all being destroyed for the sake of a very few dark people who sometimes are even evil. Now, what about getting angry at people that aren't doing necessarily dark things? Some people have trouble with that. They want to control others, and they themselves have this darkness in them. You want to rid yourself of that darkness by converting your feelings from a personal need to have control over something or someone to a need to help as many people as possible to not be controlled by others, and at the same time to even help the others that are trying to be controlling, sometimes through force, to change, but for the benefit of the many, not for a personal benefit. It can't be to save this or that, or get this or that. And the more you function that way, the less you have the fear of loss of personal things. So as soon as you start losing some of the personal fear of personal things that you might lose, you start freeing yourself to be more creative with God and finding solutions on a bigger scale. And I can tell you, in my own life right now, some people I am functioning and working with, and myself, we all have some difficulties, because there are some people who are trying to, in a very evil way, control some things about us and about things that we have and things that we're trying to do, etc. And they're trying to do that, and our focus is to try to expose the corruption and evil that these people function within, and to get others to become aware of it, to help the others to then lead in a direction of, as a more soul-level approach, to work with us to try to prevent this from going on further. If you would have a desire to be of some assistance, you can contact the group I'm a spiritual member of, and let them know that you have just a desire to be of help. We need people helping us. I can tell you that we're up against some fairly strong levels of darkness and particularly evil. It's, in recent days, it has gotten to a pretty significant level. That's one of the reasons I'm doing this show, because I want to delineate the difference between personal expression of anger and using anger on a soul level. But anyway, I don't want to talk about specifically myself, but I like adding in that touch to let people know that this is not some intellectual, you know, let's just talk about it kind of thing, because we deal with this. We deal with it as individuals, people, and souls as best as we can. Okay, so sometimes force is necessary, but the force that you use has to be the force for the all, not for the one or the few. Any force that is used for the one or the few will, first of all, be up against the law and will result in catastrophe for yourself. You might be found to be breaking some laws or being in violation of some people's rights, even though it's retribution for all the bad things. And so you don't want to go that route, because that has some serious consequences. The bigger route might take longer, might be more complicated, and you may suffer more losses. But in the long run, you wipe out the evil. You obliterate it. And rather than it just being about your things and this or that, or your bit control or this or that, it's really about bringing more of God into the world, more of light into life. Having an enlightened process that leads towards something that's good. There is never an excuse, never an excuse for giving up God for the sake of retribution. You may think that that's okay. I believe that there's some people that, probably not the Christians, but some people who say just the opposite in a sense. Someone does wrong to me, I'm going to do double wrong to them, and I'm going to get even. You know? Well, if you really think that way, and it's about you, in other words, it's about your control, your expression of your anger, and your fears ultimately of not being in control, but gaining control through some kind of violent, forceful actions or some type of trick maneuvers or something, the results could be rather complicated and devastating. Even if you don't get caught or in trouble with the law in some fashion, the end product of the whole issue, karmically, is not going to be good. I know it's hard to believe that, but it's true. I could explain it, but that would be a whole other show dealing with karma, and we don't have nearly the amount of time to get into that. So at this point, we're getting up to our break. I want you to consider and think about some of the things that I've said. Then I'm going to get more specific when we come back. And hopefully this is making some sense. I will tell some people who tell you some ways to reduce anxiety on a more specific level and other things for those of you who have that kind of problem. So I'll share that with you as well. And we will be back in, about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Today we're talking about getting past personal anger. This is a show about metaphysics and spirituality and some elements of science, and especially today, psychology. Some of my background is in that, of course. Not to say that that makes me a super expert, but it's certainly an area that I have some intimate knowledge with. And so let me now continue on. And I have some people here in the studio with me, and one person asked me, well, what about, you know, what if somebody's really doing something terrible to you? What if someone's choking you? What if someone's, you know, doing something really bad? Create some kind of issue that is imminent, and you have to deal with it. What do you do? Well, that gets into a very interesting, and it's actually covered in law, that we all have a right to live and survive and to defend ourselves. So that gets into the issue of self-defense. Now, there's an interesting part about self-defense. A couple of years ago, I took a training course in carrying a weapon, concealed weapon carry, in the state I'm from, which is Arizona. And they give you a little card if you go through this course, et cetera. And then you can theoretically carry a gun or whatever you want to do. And it's the purpose of the course is to kind of psychologically, it's not so much about guns, and everybody thinks it's about that. It's not. It's about psychology. And it's about what is going on in terms of the expression of anger and force. And the basic premise, at least in the state that I'm in, which again is Arizona, is that you can use equal and opposite force to in whatever way is necessary to defend yourself so that you do not incur some type of injury and in any kind of conflict. And that's the general principle. Kind of an equal and opposite deal. Now, you might say, well, if it's exactly equal, then you lose, or at least you tie, or something like that. Well, they say equal and opposite. They mean of appropriate type. That doesn't mean you can't succumb the other person or prevent them from harming you. You do have that right, maybe even that obligation to your own existence to do that. It's just that if someone says, I'm going to shoot you with a rubber band and you take out a gun and blow their head off, that would not be equal, you see. Or if someone, say, is using some other type of intimidating force, then that you have to look at the type of intimidation in order to deal with it. I think we have a caller online. Hello, caller.
Hi, Miles. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I am doing wonderful. I'm new to the station, and I love it.
Good.
I think you're such a wise individual, and I was calling to see if you could possibly give me some insight to this.
Okay.
Can anger turn into frustration and leads into depression? And the reason why I'm asking that question is because a few years back, I was the caretaker of my mother, and she passed. And after she passed, I fell into this deep hole of depression, just cut off everything and everybody. And the guy that I had a long-term relationship with for like 15, 16 years. And when he saw me constantly, you know, drifting into this deep, deep black hole, the only comforting thing that he could say to me was, you know what? I didn't go through this when my mom died. You know, what comforting words they were to me at that time. Was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
I'm just confused, you know, right now, because once I came out, you know, I started doing better. I tried to reach him by phone, you know, to ask him to please forgive me. You know, first of all, I had to forgive myself. And eventually, I called him, and he cut off all communication whatsoever. And it turned into anger for a minute, but the most part, it was mostly just frustrated about the whole situation and how it panned out.
Okay, now, I'm going to tell you something. And I don't want you to think that in any way I'm laying any trip on you or anything. This is about just as a definition. When I was in practice, mm-hmm. I would generally tell people that frustration is really a kind of a weaker and sometimes hidden form of anger. So it's just another word we say that makes the anger feel a little better to us, and sometimes it also is a qualitative way of describing how angry we feel at the moment.
Okay.
But not overall. We may have a lot of anger, but we feel mm-hmm. frustration at the moment. So, and remember what I said, if you did hear the earlier part of the show, there's
yes,
part of us that doesn't want to admit to being angry
about
anything.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm just frustrated, you know. I'm not really angry. You know, I just want to kill a guy, but other than that, I'm not really
Well, thank
angry,
you now
you know?
For pointing that out.
Yeah, so just, you know, and I'm not trying to make it, I'm not saying that that's definitely true, but that's usually the case. So let's talk about you. And I'm going to use you as an example, if that's okay, because
okay.
this is a, you know, this then leads everybody else to gain some other insights.
Okay.
So if we're looking at what's happened to you, you weren't able to handle a lot of things about your mother.
Why?
And it's possible that you may have triggered some elements of need on the part of this fellow, and he wasn't very good at expressing himself, maybe, and his way of dealing with not getting what he wants, and now he's again into this control thing, is to say, okay, I'm leaving. I'm gone. Remember, he instead of having a real anger response, he had a fear response. The fear was, I'm not getting cared for because she's more concerned about her problems with her mother than about me and everything else.
Absolutely.
And mm-hmm. so he has a fear response. The fear is to avoid. Okay, goodbye. I'm leaving. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And then your response is, unfortunately, because you're already depressed about your mother and the frustration, as you put it, about that, you don't know how to deal with him. So it's unfortunate. Maybe, you know, I don't know that this is possible. The two of you could go into some setting where you could both deal with these feelings you didn't deal with while you were together. It may make you both feel better. It may lead to or change in your relationship so that you can relate to again in a better way, or maybe you'll just never see each other again, but it would be some kind of release.
Right.
Now, that doesn't mean he's going to want to do that or even you want to do that. But
right.
You can do it for yourself. You can mm-hmm. actually change all the responses that you had, not the ones that you're having right now, but the ones you had first. You can mm-hmm. change them over time by reintroducing the situation, but saying, this is the way I would deal with it now. And as you do that, you get a different sense of reality. It doesn't mean you're ever going to get this guy back again, but it
wow.
does mean it's going to change who you are, and you'll feel better. And that was a good way to release some of the anger and then apply it to other people. Go out and try to help other people who have similar kinds of problems in their life and do some good with them. Give back to others and make it so that they can be freer of this sort of personal anger and frustration, as you might put it. And also they may have better relationships in the future as well.
Exactly. Let me ask you this question also while I have you on the line.
Yes.
There were several people who tried to encourage me to communicate, you know, to him through a letter, just write him a letter, and you know, just basically put on paper, you know, the things that I was going through at that time, and just apologize to him that I really did not have the tools to reach out to him in any way at that particular time. What are your feelings on that?
I think it's a good thing, but the thing about a letter
mm-hmm.
is that it's so much a monologue. And I don't know if you can do this, but I would have a dialogue with him. I would prefer that you, you know, pick up the phone, call him up, just say, hey, it's me, you know, and I really am sorry for everything I've done and said. I'd like to talk with you either on the phone or face-to-face and tell you the things that I've done that I wish I could do over again, but the things that I now know that I want to change.
Mm-hmm.
You may also, though, want to go see somebody and get that all worked out before you have that conversation. You may only have one shot.
That sounds like a good idea. You know, because he's such a wonderful guy, you know, and, I mean, very sweet demeanor. And I know that it was just so much. It was just so much for him to bear, you know, at that time because he had, you know, things going on in his life at that time also. So I truly understand, you know, I'm not... You know, I've gotten over the anger and, you know, just want to just reach out to him as a friend now because he was, you know, a good friend of mine. So,
well, you give it a try, and I suggest you listen also to the remainder of the show. It may
I
be
will.
Some help. And listen, thank you again for giving us a call.
Thank you, Niles.
You're very welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so that was... That was an interesting, we'll say, intro to this half of the show, because this is the sort of thing I'm going to be getting into, which is what can we operationally do to make an improvement and move from a personal anger to a soul-level anger? There's actually steps. And if you listen to what I was telling this last caller, I was talking about the first steps towards being a soul. They aren't the end product, but they're the beginning. And you can't skip over the first few steps and just say, oh, I'm going to be a soul just instantly. It doesn't work that way because we're so controlled by these feelings that we have. And the soul even understands this. So don't think that you have to immediately suddenly become some kind of godly angel. No, that's not necessary. But there are steps, and let's go through them so that we can, and the caller can also gain some information as I explain this. The first step is the admission to yourself that you are seeking to gain something on a personal level through the anger and or fear that you have. That's the weird part about it. I know it sounds so strange because if someone's doing something you don't like or if you're having a hard time with them, how can you say, well, I'm a victim, but I'm also a participant and I want to, you know, get something out of it. But that's the first thing you got to do. If you don't get to that point, you're not going to uncover all the feelings you have. You may think something's a minor frustration when it's really a very serious thing. You might want to kill somebody and don't even know it. I mean, it's a big thing to really be straight and honest with yourself and to let yourself experience who you are without condemning that. If you condemn it in yourself, you will repress it again, and then that can lead to a depression, as has happened. So here you got to move in a direction of admission. This is where I have been, and then the next thing is a contemplation of where you would like to be. But step tip number two: how would you like the situation to really be in the future? And you need to put yourself in a position where that future is not you trying to gain control over others because they didn't give you what you wanted. It can't be that. If it is that, you're not going to succeed, because we go back to all the premises and everything that I explained. I don't want to repeat them, but at the beginning of the show, you're going to run into all those same problems over again and just reconstitute them. So you have to really contemplate in a way in which you are starting to see yourself more as a soul. You know, it doesn't have to be 100%. And probably you're not going to actually behave that way all the time. But at least if you see yourself in the better light, you have something to move towards. When you don't see yourself in the better light, you start condemning yourself and feeling a failure and then reacting with negativity to both yourself and others. So you've got to have that positive reflection of who and what you really are. Your soul, this is what you need to become. You need to let go of the neediness, the regrets, the harshness you may have felt from others or you feel towards them. All this has to be let go, or you're not going to move on in the next step. What is the next step? The next step is actualization. You actually have to start becoming some of these things you contemplate, but only in the most minor circumstances to begin with. That's what I suggest. Instead of responding with anger, respond with a way in which you are helping someone else, even if it is with someone who's a no-goodnik. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to be giving to that no-goodnik in some stupid way. The way you may be giving to them may be, ouch, really harsh, and maybe you're going to do something that actually hurts them, but at the same time, you know it will lead them into a more enlightened position. And again, you don't want to do anything that gets yourself in trouble with legal authorities, because even though you say, well, I'm justified, you can never be justified in a position in which you have destroyed your life by putting yourself in prison or finding your reputation and your the rest of your existence totally weighted down by some type of bad legal actions that had to be used on you. So you don't want to do that because that is not a solution. Okay, the actualization then moves into another place, and that is working with others as a group rather than alone. Souls work together as groups. And so if you go to participate in some kind of group discussion with people, if you go and you become active with people involved in the situation that is making you feel both fearful and angry, or either or both, then you work better. The group helps you stay on course. You move in a direction that is more positive than negative most of the time. Your actualizations most likely will not breach the law. It's the individual that tends to create problems for themselves most of the time in legal situations. Yes, some groups go crazy. There are a few groups out there that are pretty radical and may do things that are harmful. They are quite rare and unusually strange, but not typical. I'm talking about a group of people that, whether they call themselves spiritual or otherwise, who are functioning to create more virtue, doing things to create more virtue. That's using their energies in the correct direction, and it tempers their anger in a way in which it's really not anger anymore, because they're not expressing it in any hostile way. They're expressing it in a co-creative way with God, regardless of what it is. And so you can, and I realize I'm talking generalities still, but you like our the caller that just called, in her case, she could actually get together with people who have had similar problems. She could even run an ad on Craigslist or whatever. Say, hey, I want to meet people who have had this kind of issue. And I don't want to pay any therapists or anything, or maybe I don't need that. But I want to get together and let's find ways that we can make it better for not only ourselves, but for everybody else. Maybe we could start an organization to reunite people who, because of their fears and angers, have separated themselves from each other. I don't know, you might call them the reuniting class or group or whatever. And I mean, it's an odd thing, but when we think about things on a group level and we start working from a place bigger than ourselves, we really quickly develop ourselves into being souls. It's amazing how quickly people do change in that kind of environment. But if you try to completely isolate yourself, especially if you're very angry, the results are oftentimes going to lead to anxiety and depression. And if you already are in that position, then there are some things that you need to be concerned about, especially if your sleep patterns are disturbed, if you have obsessive thoughts, you have certain abnormal desires to be destructive or to run away. Maybe you're overly fearful. If you're into those situations, the first thing to recognize is that they are internal realities. You're creating them, you can change them, and that gives you a sense of control over them. You may need to go see someone professionally if these are serious issues. I don't want to discourage you from doing that just because you're listening to me on the radio at this point. That's not the answer. I mean, certainly, you could contact me or whatever, and I'll talk to you. But the point is, you may need someone helping you to do this. But if you don't think that's necessary, then take these steps. First of all, never allow yourself to ruminate on the anger. In other words, rumination on anger is where you go to bed at night and you just sit there and you go over and over the things that you don't like about this or that. And they're almost always things you're out of control of. You feel out of control. You can't control this person or that thing or whatever. And you go, oh, this terrible thing's going to happen. That's what terrible thing's going to happen. Catastrophizing is a word that I and many other people use. Okay, so you do that. If you're doing that, you have to stop it. How do you stop it? Well, you can't stop it by just not thinking. Some people think they can. That doesn't work, by the way, in most circumstances. Instead, you need to constructively think of things that are positive, that you would like, that are creative fantasies, we'll call it that, especially if it's a sleep disturbance and it's keeping you up at night, but if other parts of the day as well. Think of those things and think of the positive things that you can do in them. People that, if they're very depressed, will have trouble with that because they won't be able to come up with them. So they have to start writing down and thinking about some positive things when they feel a little bit better and maybe consult some people who are more objective to help them come up with those things so that they have the things to at least think about when they start having the negative thoughts and the ruminations. Okay, so hopefully that you're picking up on what I'm suggesting at this point. And you might say, well, this sounds awfully psychotherapist. And, well, again, it's in my nature. I can't help it. But there's a metaphysical principle going on here. And the metaphysics is that energy follows thought greater than its own. If you keep ruminating on the negative, you're creating more negative feelings in yourself, and the energy in you is going to become darker. And so you're creating a reality that is negative within yourself that will attract the negativity to you. Because negative energy is being drawn into you. So you don't want that. And you can change it. You can change it by just having a list that you can go to. It could be in your mind or it could be written down, however. And that list is of creative things that are positive, that you see enlightening to yourself and others. And you can think about those things when you need to sleep or when you need to relax during the day. If if you're suddenly caught in some kind of angry tirade or whatever is going on. That is a very important, we'll call it, I guess, a challenging imaginative exercise. And it is important to do this before things get too far out of hand. Don't say, well, I'll do it in half an hour from now. Right now, I just want to think about all this terrible stuff. No, because if you wait that long, you may get so riled, you may get so negative, that you really, even if you try doing it, it's too late. You've created such a mess in your emotional system and your mind. So recognize that this is something that's better done sooner than later, and take care of it right when you can, and you'll get a better result. Okay. What's next in the steps, we'll call them, okay? Also, if you have a circumstance where you are being threatened and under great duress, you need the help of others. Do not try to deal with everything alone unless you're really trapped in some kind of weird place where you are alone and there's some kind of monster that's after you or whatever. That's a weird thing. Get off that place or leave that place and go to find some place where there's other people. Because you need to lonely, not just on yourself, if you're going to get to the soul consciousness anyway. Look for people who have already dealt somewhat successfully with the area of fear and anger that is controlling you. And see how they have overcome it. And help, ask them to help you to do the same. As they help you, they're also helping everyone else, if they're on a soul level. And if they refuse to help you, you don't have to worry about it. Because they're not functioning as souls. And they probably really never dealt with the same kind of problem anyway, because you can't get over these problems unless you function more as a soul. So it's not that hard to do. And literally, in today's world, with all the internet and stuff, it's actually possible to create your own group over the internet. You don't even have to meet the people. Although, I like interaction, personal, you know, face-to-face better. Monologues created by emails, etc., is so lame compared to the direct interaction of people talking to each other. So that's what I really encourage, because it's much more effective, and there's a lot to be desired in those emails that people keep sending each other. They almost never express what's really going on in real time, and they really, most of the time, don't even express almost anything of how people feel about stuff. So it is not a good way to try to deal with this sort of situation. I mean, it's okay if you want to give somebody a date and time when you might get together or something, or directions of how to get somewhere. That's perfectly okay for an email, but not these kinds of complex human interactions. Okay, what else can we do? Once you get really good at this, why not try to get other people to start doing some of the things that have been successful for yourself? Share your own understandings and experiences with other people. Even if you're already in a bad place, you can remember sometimes when you've overcome some good things. Don't just think about those good things that you've overcome, but share with others how you overcame the good things, even though at the present time you may not be in such a good place. You might say, well, how am I going to do it? I feel so depressed. You got to try it a little bit at a time. But as you focus out more and deal with other people that way, you will gain so much that your depression will lift in a relatively short order. Nothing lifts depression more than people focusing out and giving to others. And especially when they're creating the giving. It isn't, they're just not volunteering for, you know, some soup kitchen or something. I'm not saying it's not bad. I mean, if you really want to do that, that's okay. But what I'm suggesting is something more creative, where you are using those things inside yourself that you have gained as jewels that you can give to others. Take the time, take the energy to be of service, and you will see amazing improvements in who you are and what you are, very rapidly. Okay, next, don't get yourself embroiled in argument or in fights with others, whether you know them or not, because those kinds of ways of relating to people are just dumping stations for all these negative feelings. They don't provide a solution to the problems. And what they do is they give a false sense of, well, I really let them have it, you know, I'll fix them. You know. Now, I've done this many, many times, and everybody has, right? But the point is that it's not productive. It isn't a solution. It's a way to actually trap yourself into false beliefs about what an anger response is, a correct anger response is. I know some therapists say, oh, just let them have it. Dump it out. You know, that's nonsense. Total nonsense. It is ineffective in most circumstances. You just get more anger back. And if the other person's evil, they'll even use it against you in some way. They'll record it and say, look how crazy this person is. Yeah. Or maybe they'll sue you for slander or whatever. I mean, the point is that this is not the way to function because it doesn't solve the issue. If you're willing to, and if you really have someone that you are seriously in conflict with, if they're willing to discuss it with you rationally, get a third person before you have the conversation. At a minimum, get a tape recorder. And so that you each know that you're being recorded and you know that you are hearing each other, or there's a third person there who is able to act someone as a referee. That may sometimes resolve things as long as the other person is willing to. If the other person is no good and I can really tie into being obnoxious and harmful, no, I wouldn't suggest that you waste your time doing that. I would suggest then only if the person is directly trying to attack you or do something miserable, then you go through the group process. You get other people to work together with you to find a solution. That solution sometimes, if it's really a physical confrontation, then they may help you to rebuff the other person or the other people. But I'm talking about so many things, it could be a lot of different circumstances, of course. Anyway, we're running out of time, and I would love to keep going about this. There's a lot more to talk about. But I hope that this has made some sense to you. I wanted to cover a lot of different possibilities so that it would be helpful to as great a number of people as possible to get past their personal anger and or fears and to give them some kind of hope that their life can obviously be much more productive and much more virtuous and enlightening. So we'll move on. And I just want to mention that on April 19th, for those of you who may be passing through or live in the Phoenix area, over in Mesa, which is a suburb of Phoenix, at Borders in Mesa, Fiesta, Mimi is going to be talking about, she's a member of the spiritual group I'm a member of, the Fifth Root Rites. So if you can stop in and hear that, I assume it's going to be from 7 o'clock to 8:15. That's the normal time that they do that. And there's no charge. You can just go in and have a nice conversation about that. That's another place you can talk about things, about how you feel, etc., and learn some stuff about how human beings have developed over time. Everybody thinks that human beings are exactly the same as we were 10,000 years ago or 5,000 years ago. Like, oh, we didn't have a change, or we just our culture, society changed. Now, we've changed enormously. Each generation is a little better, usually. And we're growing in numerous ways, mostly mentally these days. And that has to do with this fifth race of people. For those of you who are interested in that, you can go over there and talk to Mimi. And if you haven't heard, Ideal Cellsorption Resveratrol is available from foreveryoungproducts.com, 800-777-7850. You can get it for yourself or for your dog or cat, and this stuff works. And it's not that much money, and it really, really makes a difference in terms of keeping you younger, healthier, and you'll live 30 to 50% longer if you follow the directions and use this stuff. It's really great. And anybody who wants to can email me at thoughts@whylifeis.com, and please check out our website, agelesswisdom.com. That website tells you all kinds of stuff, and it also has all past shows on it. If you're interested in those shows, you can click on them and listen to them. This station also has those shows available, so you can listen either way. Well, we're out of time. I'm out of time for right now. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.